All right, the reason we did the parable of the minas first is because it was given first. Whose house was he in that led him to give that parable? Anybody remember that wee little man?
Zacchaeus.
Okay, Zacchaeus. And what city did Zacchaeus live in? No?
A wee little city.
No. Yeah, it's a wee little city, very deep in, deep down. It's called Jericho. Jericho is about, 500 feet below sea level, and Jerusalem is quite a bit higher, so it's about a 17-mile walk, and takes about 6 to 8 hours, depending on how fit you are, which I'm sure these guys were, because that's all they did, was walk places. Anyway, the reason I say all that is because either this very night or the next night is when he has the triumphal entry, and when he goes into the temple and cleanses the temple. So we're just about in the final week, and the parable that we're going to be talking about this evening in chapter 25 was probably given 2 days before he died. So the first parable, week or a little more than a week before he died, this one is right in the middle of his ministry, and actually it's right after the destruction, the questions. You remember the disciples were talking to Jesus about how beautiful the temple was, and you remember his answer in Matthew 24? What's going to come?
Destruction.
Yeah, not one stone on another. And of course, they ask him three different questions, and he answers them one by one. And the first one centers on the destruction of Jerusalem, and the one we're most interested in centers on the end of the age and the destruction not of of Jerusalem, but of the entire world. And so that's what we're going to be looking at. And I don't think we'll spend any time on this upper portion, even though when I first started, I thought, well, we're going to finish what we didn't finish last week, but we can come back and look at it. So let's go ahead and at the very bottom of the page, there's some subtle differences. In the first parable, there's a king. What is there in the second parable, in the parable of the talents? See at the bottom of the page there? It's like a man. So this is just a regular man. And he's dividing up his goods, so he's not just leaving them a little bit, he's leaving them all of them. And then there's the difference between the mina, which is one day's pay, and a talent, which depending on whether it's a silver talent or a gold talent, would be hundreds or even thousands of days' pay. So we're talking about a lot more money. And the second thing is, in the first parable, he divides it up, mina per person, but in this one he makes an important point that I want to look at on the top of the next page. So stewardship is based on ability, and so he divides up his goods. One gets one talent, one gets five, and the other gets ten, and it is based on his ability, to each according to his ability. So you see that little chart there. The according to is a word that has to do with proportion. So on the judgment day, when we stand before the Lord, it's going to be our abilities that are going to be determining how good our faithful stewardship is. Because you can look at people, and they may be doing a lot, and yet because of their ability, they're not doing as much as somebody else. Because to whom much is given, much is expected. And so we've got to understand that the Lord is going to be assessing us not on the amount of work we do. Because like I say, you got a big congregation and one person's doing so much more than another person. But the reality is it might be that he's still not a good steward, because he's not doing as much as he could be doing. And that's really the key here, is that we're not doing as much as we could be doing. And so people, like, you see this passage right under the box, 2 Corinthians chapter 8, it says, I bear them witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing. I see Paul the same way. Paul said, I'm never satisfied. I'm always pushing pushing to gain more and to be more. And then, of course, at the end of that, what does he say? As many of you as are mature,
have the same mind.
Yeah, you're going to have the same mind as me. So stewardship is kind of like a snowball going down the hill. The further it goes, the bigger it gets, and the more we understand, and the more so to whom much is given, much is expected. And as he's going to say, that take away the talent from the one talent man and give it to the 10 talent man. Because to everyone who has, more will be given. But what if you don't have? What if you don't do anything? Even what you have will be taken away. And all right, so let's go ahead. Where are we at here? Okay, so right underneath that verse, Jesus skips over the leaving and focuses on the return. And each successful servant here has done what to what he was given?
Doubled.
Okay, so the five man got 10. The 10 man got... Wait a minute, there is no 10 man, is there? Sorry.
5-3-1.
5-3-1. This is what happens when you spend all day comparing the 10 men and one talent, or one parable. Okay, so he's going to give an account. So the Lord wants to know, what did you do with what I gave you? Now, I think for our judgment, it's going to be a little different, because I think before, because these guys knew what they were given. Do we always know exactly what our talents are, the things that we can do? So I think the Lord's going to tell us on the judgment day, look, here's the gifts that I gave to you, and here's what you did with them. And so if we use them, and that's the whole purpose of these parables, it's required of stewards that we be what?
They be faithful.
All right? We need to be faithful, which means seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness. So our stewardship is pretty clear. So the other difference in this, the one talent or the one mina man, what'd he do with his he wrapped it in a napkin. What did this guy do? Okay, he buried it in the ground. So both of them are pretty clear. What am I going to do with this?
Not lose it.
I'm not going to do anything with it, but I'm not going to lose it. I don't want any part of this. I don't want it to go into the bankers. I don't want it. I just don't want to have any responsibility here at all. And so the charges, though, are very similar as well. Look toward the bottom of the second page there where it says, he received one talent, said, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, and gathering where you have not scattered, and I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there, you have what is yours. The second man in Luke 19, right underneath there, here is your mina, which I kept put away in a handkerchief, for I feared you because you are an austere man. You collect what you did not deposit, and you reap where you did not sow. So there are Christians, I've met them, you probably have as well, who are so afraid to make a mistake that what will they do? They won't do anything. So they don't want to go talk to their neighbor, because if they talk to their neighbor, what could happen? Yeah, they might be rejected. And it'll be my fault, so the best thing for me to do is let that go and wait for somebody else to do it, and how's the Lord look at that? See, that's not the way we should look at God. God is not expecting results. He's expecting effort. If this man had lost everything, but he had tried his very best, you think the Lord would have responded the way he does here? I don't think he would. I think that there are situations where we do push on and something bad happens, and we'll never know whether it's our fault or whether it just would have happened anyway. Because, like I say, sometimes when you go out and try to do church discipline and you go out and talk to the guy and you want him to repent and you say something, and he just gets flaming mad, and what do? Do you not go?
You become the bad guy.
Yeah, you become the bad guy. And you might think, I don't know if I want to do that again. That did not turn out very well. Well, that's not the right answer. You know, it doesn't matter, really. Our responsibility is to withdraw from every brother who walks disorderly. How they respond to it, does that matter? It doesn't matter. So, fear has got to be replaced with trust and with the understanding of grace. You know, sometimes I think about that. God has given us every assurance. If we're still afraid, what else would he call it but lack of faith? If we're not going to go out and do what he's given us the ability to do. Now, at the bottom of the page, you see this time he calls him a wicked and lazy servant. So this time it's not just rebellion, it's actually laziness. And so the Lord here wants us to understand that we need to do something. Now, I want to turn over to the third page now. And let's look at these two points that he makes, because I think this is the hub of the parable. To everyone who has, more will be given. He will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And then the second one in Luke is, for I say to you that everyone who has will be given, and from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And I thought this afternoon about something that we could all be doing that doesn't require any risk or any danger, and that is 2 Peter 1. Add to your faith virtue, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness, brotherly kindness, and love. Now, if we're good stewards, what are we doing? It's our part. Adding on your part in your faith, supply. So Peter goes on to say this, though. If these things are yours, you won't be barren or unfruitful. So what's the implication? If you don't have these things, you're going to be barren and unfruitful. Even what you have will be taken away. Then he goes on, he says, he that lacks these things is short-sighted even to blindness and has forgotten that he was cleansed from his old sins. So he's lost what he had. He's become barren. He's become unfruitful. He is short-sighted to blindness and forgotten he was cleansed. But then in verse 10, if you do these things, you will what? You'll never stumble. So if you have, more will be given. And then in verse 11, he actually says it. So an entrance will be supplied to you abundantly into the everlasting kingdom of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So here's one example of how stewardship, if you do it, you gain more. But if you don't do it, even what you have is going to be taken away. You're going to become blind and you're going to forget the cleansing from your old sins. Rob?
Well, being fruitful is not a one-time event. Christian throughout their life, I've heard of some people say, yeah, I've taught some classes or preached or taught somebody, and you're like, when? Like 10 years ago. Well, you know, I mean, just it's an ongoing thing, and there may be more opportunities later in your life than there was early in your life. Right. You never know the situation, so
that's true.
It's got to be, you got to be on a constant watch.
And that's basically what Jesus said when he said, I'm the vine, you're the branches, and then what?
Bear fruit.
He that bears fruit, the Lord will prune so he can what? Bear more fruit. But he who does not bear fruit, cast forth as a branch, withered, and cast into the fire. So same basic teaching in both of those places. And in both of those places, the fruit is just as important to be the inward fruit, the fruits of the Spirit, or these things Peter asks us to add, or these battles that we fight and we conquer. We become more and more a master of our lives. Less and less are we tossed to and fro and carried about, and less are the lust of the flesh engaged in. And so we're bearing fruit. And even if we never convert anyone, there's still lots of fruit. The fruits of the Spirit are, and he lists them all. And as I say, we can be adding to our faith. So even if we don't feel like we have the ability to do more than just go out and talk to our neighbors, waiting for them to ask us something, and if they never do, what can we do? Because Peter says, be ready to give an answer to who? Those who ask you. And so you throw it out. I'm a Christian. I'm a preacher. I'm a member of the church. And you see how they respond. And if their response is they never talk to you again, is that a pretty good indication that they're never going to ask you anything and that they're not interested? And so it's just an interesting set of circumstances. So Jesus makes it clear at the very top of the page again then that if you have, more will be given. That's God's promise, is that if you keep working, I will give you more opportunities, I will give you more responsibilities, I will give, because that's really interesting. The five talent man gets the extra talent to do what? To retire and use that money for his own benefit? No, to do more work. He's actually giving him more responsibility. And of course, any faithful Christian, would he like to have more responsibility?
Yeah,
I think it's an honor for the Lord to keep opening doors and giving you opportunities and giving you the ability to get involved in these things. And so to those who have, more will be given. So if in our personal Christian life we keep seeing more and more opportunities coming our way, that's a pretty good indication that we're right where we ought to be. But those who don't have, even what they do have is going to be taken away, and they'll find that their sins, they forget the cleansing from their sins, the sins start to take greater and greater control, they lose more and more interest in the scriptures, and the next thing you know, they're falling away. And you're trying to figure out, how in the world? I knew that guy. He was such a fine Christian. Well, what happened? Did that happen overnight? He didn't get up one morning, I'm just not going to be a Christian anymore. It took a process, and he hid it. He didn't talk to any of us. He didn't talk to anyone. And the next thing you know, he's gone. So the opportunities here that we have are very important. And so I think that that's pretty much what I wanted to deal with as far as the parable, except for this one last point. And that is, in the first parable, he just says, take away, and he ends it with that. Look at this parable, verse 30, about 2 inches down the page, third page. Cast the unprofitable servant, where?
Outer darkness.
Into the outer darkness. Now, that means what to a Christian? If you're cast in the outer darkness, you're not going to heaven, right? And there's only one other place. And that's why Jesus said, there's going to be weeping and gnashing of teeth, because there's going to be people in the Lord's church who just warm the pew. They don't do anything. They don't pray. They don't give very much. They don't try to talk to their friends and neighbors. They just basically put their opportunities into a napkin, or they bury them in the ground, and they don't do anything. And so the Lord is pretty clear. All right, what I want to do with the rest of the class is keep going. Because he doesn't stop there. In one day, he starts with the destruction of Jerusalem. Then he moves to the 10 virgins. Then he moves to the parable of the talents. And then finally, he moves to this one. I'm not sure it's a parable, but I'm not exactly clear that it is an actual event that's going to occur. Because I think that some people are going to respond like this. But and there's another interesting question we'll get to in just a few moments here. But in verse 31 there, right in the middle of the page, when the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. Literal? Parable? Story? What do you think? Is he going to separate the sheep and the goats?
Yeah.
Okay. Is he going to sit on a throne? Yeah, he's going to sit on the throne of his glory. We must all be brought before the what?
The
judgment seat of Christ to receive the things done in the body, whether they be good or evil. Or Revelation 20, where he says there's going to be a great white throne, and everybody's going to be standing before him, and the books are going to be opened, and everyone's going to be judged based on what was written in the books. So right now, God's writing it all down. What does Jesus say about our idle words in Matthew 12? Does that mean they're being written down? Yeah. So all this stuff's being recorded. That's why I said, everything we don't repent of, we're going to hear it again. That's why, as I say, at least once a week, maybe every day, Father, forgive me for those sins that I've not repented of, those sins I'm not aware of. Help me to figure out what they are and get them out of my life. And please bless me, because, you know, sometimes we forget. We commit a sin. Something happens. We don't get back to it. So from time to time, and David does that. He said, keep me back from presumptuous sins. And we find sometimes God's people asking for forgiveness for everything, and not just one specific thing, because we're very concerned. Like James said, to him who knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Well, maybe I don't remember, or maybe I didn't know that I didn't do that. So anyway, we're going to be separated, and let me read this paragraph right in the middle, because it'd be easier for me to do that than to put it forth. So at this point in the discourse, we need to determine if this, like the other two, is a discussion of only those who are disciples, or whether this is spoken about everyone. It appears from the context that it is the former. These are the disciples who have been given opportunity and either used them or ignored them, although it could be argued that those in the world did not do these things either. Their judgment is going to be based more on their wicked deeds and disobedience to the gospel, while the disciples will be judged more on their use of opportunities. But although this can't be stated with absolute certainty, it is the most probable conclusion from what follows. So I think that this is dealing with the people who are faithful Christians and the people who are not faithful Christians. And I'll tell you why in just a few minutes. So hold your, I mean, I'm sure some of you may not agree with that, and that's okay. But when he says, you didn't do it to one of the least of my brethren, who are the least of Jesus' brethren? Aren't they Christians? Can you be a brother of Christ and not be a Christian? Hebrews chapter 2 makes it clear, and I'll talk about this in just a few minutes. So how many ungodly people who don't even know anyone who's in the church are going to be told, I was hungry and you didn't give me anything to eat, I was thirsty, and when they say, Lord, when did we do that? And he said, you didn't do it to my brethren. Is he going to be saying that to worldly people? Maybe a few. But it strikes me, and again, we'll talk about this in just a few minutes, but it strikes me that these six things that he mentioned, you see that box right in the middle or right toward the bottom of the page, I was hungry and you gave me food. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was sick and you visited me. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was naked and you clothed me. I was in prison and you came to me. These are responsibilities that Christians have. And again, you can make the point, well, ungodly people need to make it too, but ungodly people, do they even think about this kind of stuff? See, they're more focused on eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die, and I think that this focuses more on brethren, and the reason that I say that is because of this verse right at the very bottom. The righteous will answer him saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in? Or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me. So the focus here is on the brethren. Now, let's look at this verse. Let's turn to page 4. Let me just note at the bottom there, in bringing many sons to glory, and then we'll go ahead and turn over to this next page, where I've got all these bolded statements that I want to read. He who sanctifies and those who are being sanctified are all of one, for which reason he is not ashamed to call them brethren. So we have to be sanctified by the one who sanctifies for the Lord not to be ashamed to call us brethren. And then he says, I will declare your name to my brethren. And then, here am I and the children whom God has given me. The children have partaken in flesh and blood, and he likewise shared in the same. And then, I think the key is verse 16. He doesn't give aid to angels. Who does he give aid to? Seed of Abraham, not the seed of Adam. Everyone's a seed of Adam. Who's the seed of Abraham today?
Christians.
Yeah, just Christians. As many of you as were baptized into Christ did what? Put on Christ. And if you were Christ's, you're Abraham's seed. So if you haven't been baptized, are you Abraham's seed? Are you his brethren? And that's why I say this passage has a very limited application. And we need to understand that within the church itself, we have responsibilities. So when the announcements are made up here on Sunday morning that so-and-so is sick or so-and-so is in the hospital, is that an opportunity to be a good steward? Yeah, because as Jesus said, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. And like I say, it fits hand in glove with the parable of the talents. It fits hand in glove with the parable of the virgins and the oil and the no oil. And so I think that that is a better way of looking at it. Although, you know, you could make the argument in Galatians 6 that we are to do that which is good to who? All men, but especially those of the household of faith. So, you know, and I've heard denominational Christians, I've heard people use this verse, like the Salvation Army. And their claim is, who are these least?
Poor or something.
Everybody. Okay, so the church has a responsibility to take care of all of the needs of all of the people in the world, because Jesus said, if we don't, but is he talking about the people in the world? These my brethren. And so you have to be careful with context here. Jesus did not, that's not one of the good works. You remember in Ephesians chapter 2, it says that we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works that God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. Is there anywhere in the scriptures where he developed the church for the purpose of taking care not of the spiritual needs of the lost, but the physical needs of the lost? Do you see that anywhere in the scriptures? The answer is no. Well, you see it here. Well, no, you don't. Because he's talking about my brethren. And so that's where we're left with. We're left with Galatians chapter 6. We work that which is good to all men, however, especially to those of the household of faith. Rob?
You mentioned Sunday morning or night, and of course you mentioned it several times lately about Hebrews 11. And actually, throughout the scriptures, I'm convinced a lot of what we read about, you know, the history of God's people and those tasked with something. I mean, look at the people in Hebrews 11. The opportunity was there. What if they just chose, well, I'm just not going
to
do it.
I'm too busy to build an ark.
Yeah. Or sacrifice or whatever. But God gave them the opportunity, and they did it, and they didn't know the results all the time. They just did it.
They did it because it was an opportunity. They relished it. They leaped for it. Abraham was so excited to leave his country because he wanted to be the father of many nations. And that's why he offered his son. I mean, There was never a moment's doubt. He was told the night before, he gets up the next morning. Most of us would say, well, I'll give this a week or two. I got to think about this a little bit. But not Abraham. He gets up the next morning. 3 days later, he's on the mountain. He's got the boy tied. He's got the knife in his hand. And then God says, now I know. So, yeah, that's a really good point, Rob. And I think that the issue here that we need to be concerned about, and he's given us, here's another opportunity. I mean, if you're thinking to yourself, well, I can't really preach to people. I can't do this. I can't do that. Can you visit someone who's sick? Can you give somebody food if they're hungry? Can you go visit someone if they're in prison? These my brethren. And the answer, of course, is anybody can do that. And then, so then we get to verse 41, which is about 4 inches down on page 4. Then he will also say to those on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Now, is that a pretty clearer picture than cast into the outer darkness? And this is a serious thing, because once again, he said, I was hungry, and you didn't give me anything to eat. That was a sin. I was thirsty. You didn't give me anything to drink. I was sick, and you never came. I was with lack of clothing, but you were too busy with your own things. You never even bothered. And so, as I say, when these announcements are made Sunday morning, we need to take advantage of that opportunity, because that may be a stewardship that we can jump into, even if it's just praying for them, or maybe going to visit them, or going to, or trying to help them in some way. So, again, the question is asked, verse 44, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or stranger or naked or sick or in prison? And he will answer them and said, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of these, or one of the least of these. Now, the definition of these I put in here because I want to make sure that everybody understands this is a pronoun that goes back to brethren. Brethren is the last noun. This is a pronoun. So it says, you look at the definition, of these persons or things. This sort. And then the second definition, referring to a person or thing before mentioned, something preceding. Well, the only thing that's preceding is one of these, my brethren. And so, again, I think the whole parable, this whole explanation is like an asterisk on the parable of the virgins. This is the oil that they didn't have. The parable of the talents. This is the trading and making gain that the Lord wants us to be involved in. This is the outer darkness. Or this is enter the joy of your Lord. So, anyway, I'd like to open that up now. Anybody think that this is just talking about everybody? This is just worldly people? That this is giving the church the opportunity to take its funds from the first day of the week and minister to everyone? Is anybody kind of looking at it like that? Go ahead, Vance.
I think as individual Christians, we need to be like Paul said, and like you referenced Galatians 6:10. We should always have that mindset of wanting to help everybody. But when you look at, was that 1 Timothy, as far as let not the church be burdened, when they're talking about widows that don't meet a certain age, that's the job of the family. So the point that I guess I'm trying to make is there are specific times when the church should be burdened, not burdened, but taking care of the widow indeed.
Right.
Yet there's times when, as individual Christian, it's our job. We should always have that mindset, I believe, of not mandating that, hey, you will give this or you will give this from the church's funds, but us as individuals should be willing to help people out
right.
when they're truly in need. And I don't think that's what you're saying.
No.
I just wanted to maybe clarify, there are times in the scriptures where the church is prohibited from giving to widows that are widows not in need.
Right.
Now, us as individual Christians of that congregation of that widow could go over there and help them out, but those funds would not be coming from the church.
Right. And, of course, that's what we do. When somebody walks in the door, and says, I have a need, we don't take it from the treasury. You know, we all get together and we talk about it, or two or three of us get together and we take it out of our own pocket. And so that's a part of this. And I wouldn't minimize that, because I think as we have opportunity, we should work good to all men. Because you can sometimes convert people based on that. And so, and it's just common mercy. You know, there was a woman, it was Christmas Eve, and her husband died of a heart attack. And she was a couple hundred miles from home, and she had two kids with her. She didn't know what to do. So I said, I'll take her home. And so Jeannie and I put her up for the night, and we tried to talk to her and comfort her, because she just lost her husband, and it's Christmas Eve. And so, but I could have just as easily said, well, good luck. You know, it's not my responsibility. But the Good Samaritan teaches us what? You know, if there's an opportunity. But as I said, I just think this parable, especially when he says, one of the least of my brethren, that the primary focus here is on the obvious responsibility. On the weekly basis, we get together. I may not know all the needs of my neighbors. They may have great needs, but I don't spend a lot of time with them. Most of them keep to themselves. So he's very clear that if these things are needed by my brethren and you don't do them, you're going to be cast into the outer darkness. So this is a terrible way to hide your talents. And so, quickly here, because we're just about out of time, let's look at this last point, and that is the reward and penalty are among the highest for the reward and the most severe for the punishment. So we look at the reward there. Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from when? All right, so before Adam and Eve even sinned, did God have this kingdom prepared? Yeah. And it makes perfect sense, because if you look at Hebrews chapter 11, what was Abraham waiting for? See that verse there about 2 inches from the bottom of the page? He's waiting for a city whose builder and maker is God. Now, where did he get that information? And then the next one, these all died in faith, not having received the promises. Well, they didn't receive them. Were they given? Yeah, they were given these promises. Well, what were they? Well, they were, in verse 14, they seek a homeland. And then in verse 16, they desire better, that is, a heavenly country. And God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. So these things go all the way back to Abel. Abel is one of the people he's talking about here that died in faith, not having received those promises. And so was Enoch. And so was Noah. And so was Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Sarah. They're all mentioned. And then it says these all died in faith. So this kingdom, and of course Jesus revealed a whole lot more than these people got. But putting it all together, that's where I want to be. Because the other side is, depart from me, you cursed, into what fire? And who's it prepared for? Talk about company you wouldn't want to spend any time around. To be with the devil and his angels in this fire. Now, that doesn't mean we'll ever see each other, because it's also dark. But just the whole concept of it. That the same fire that's been prepared for the devil and for the devil's angels, all of these people, even the ones who didn't feed Jesus, who didn't go visit Jesus. And what do you mean we did? You didn't do it to one of these least of my brethren. So this is a pretty serious threat and a pretty serious promise. So stewardship now comes into a much higher level. If you're not a good steward, you're going into the same fire as the devil and his angels. If you're a good steward, then you're going to enter into the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Jack?
You know, there's another part to this verse that, to me, excuse me, is as frightening as the everlasting fire, and that is the words, depart from me. Can you imagine being separated from God for eternity?
No. No, because God is light. And without God, there's no light, there's no blessings, there's nothing. Good point. All right, anybody else? Virgil?
Yeah, just a short. Two levels of responsibility that we look at here. One is individual responsibility, and the other is a collective responsibility of the church that you're associated with. Many times it's a whole lot easier for to be involved in the church and its responsibility, because if it's the individual responsibility, it's basically solely upon you.
Right.
And you're the one that's going to suffer the loss. The church, in a sense, has deep pockets compared to the individual. That's all I want to say.
Yep. No, and that's right. But we can't rely on what the church is doing collectively. We have to also take very great concern to what we're supposed to be doing individually. That's why I say when these announcements are made, is that for the whole church or is that for individuals? See, that's an individual responsibility, right? So-and-so's in the hospital. Is the church going to go visit them? No. But are we? You say, well, no, I'm too busy. Well, you better get unbusy, because those are critical things. All right, we'll go ahead and stop there and pick up next week with a different parable.